try again.
Welcome to the Ease of Kayak Fishing on KayakFishingRadio.com. I'm your new Friday night host, Dennis Spike from KayakFishing.com. And as I welcome everyone aboard, I'd like to especially thank Chip Gibson and all the hosts and all the roundtable participants at Kayak Fishing Radio for the opportunity to participate in this new venue. It's exciting. It's a great way to reach anglers. My whole career in sport fishing is about reaching and educating anglers about the sport, and kayak fishing and radio is just genius. How you doing tonight, Chip?
I'm good.
Have I got you there?
Man. Yeah, I'm here, man. I was just tweeting.
Tweeting away. You know, the last show I did here in Occidental, California, I'm located about an hour and a half north of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, up on the Sonoma Coast, and about 5 or 6 years ago, the FCC introduced low-power LP FM radio. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah, I sure have.
Well, the LP venue, there's a little radio station in town called Cows, K-O-W-S, and I had a show called Fishing the Wine Country. But one of the great things about community radio is that each station pays a little blanket to get rights to songs and published material. And as I was writing this show, I realized I didn't quite have the resource for all the hoity-toity tools.
Ah. You'll catch up.
Yeah, as the weeks go on, I'll get into it. We're hoping to get some callers phoning in, get somebody on the round table besides me and Chip. We're going to talk about what's going on in California. And even from last night's show, we've got a lot going on. I had some questions for listeners. We've got the blogs here at Kayak Fishing Radio. And I'm pretty excited.
Cool.
Chip, what's it going to be? Dirt biking for you this weekend?
Yeah, I think we're going to opt for hobby number two. So,
you know, here on the Pacific, there was a big storm down in New Zealand, down in the South Seas, and it has brought a swell onto the Western Pacific. I guess this is the Eastern Pacific coast that is pretty big. It's been on the news down in Southern California. Newport Beach has had some big, big sets coming in, washing people off the beach.
Whoa.
Excuse me. And they've been calling for dangerous waves up here, but I took Michelle over to the dropped Michelle off at the bar this afternoon. No, I'm only kidding. She works at a hotel. And on the way over, we stopped by Bodega Bay, and it looked beautiful. But we've got some issues here in the water, and that is red tide. You get it where you're at, don't you?
You get it sometimes in the Gulf there, and some
more
maybe
in the
a few times
water,
on
huh?
Yeah,
and in the Gulf. Red tide is a die-off of phytoplankton. When there's too much phytoplankton in the water, not enough oxygen created to keep everything alive, and it's really bad for bivalve animals and organisms. And that would be your clams, your mussels, and indeed the abalone. A lot of people aren't familiar with the abalone fishery here in California, but it is one of the few abalone fisheries in the world, and it is tremendous. You know, it's funny, a lot of the guys and gals who fish and live in areas like Florida and Georgia and the southeast, where the coastal areas are made up of landings. You know, here in California, it seems like the coastal areas are, over the years, more and more been made up of neighborhoods. And sport fishing, recreational fishing, and even commercial fishing have really gone by the wayside. Now, I realize that's the way it is in all the fisheries, but in California, it's really obvious. So in Southern California, you don't see, and even on the whole California coast, you don't see as much traffic as you used to. You know anywhere, especially in western Florida on the coast there, Fort Myers, Pine Island, all those coastal inland areas, you go near all the landings and there's lots of boats, lots of trailers, lots of people out fishing. On the California coast, you don't see it as much anymore. But when we have special seasons and special fisheries like abalone, we sell about 35,000 abalone permits a year to recreational fishermen. And that's adding 35,000 fishermen to the sport. And we're seeing it right now. We've got, even with this red tide, abalone diving is still legal. So if you find clear water and a healthy colony, you're in good shape. We've also got the nearshore rockfish fishery going on right now, which is a spectacular fishery. That runs through the end of the year. And what we do most of our guiding and fishing on up here, lingcod, cabazon, real dinosaur fish, delicious white meat, flaky fighters. And then 20 other species of rockfish. In addition, for the first time in three seasons, we've got a legal salmon season for king coho salmon. That's bringing a lot of people to the coast. So I can tell you, as a guy who's not only in the sport fishing business, but has a deep passion for recreational fishing, to see the parade of campers with boats and kayaks and canoes and inflatables marching up and down Highway 1 heading to the beach. It's a wonderful thing. And they say Labor Day is the end of summer, you know, marks the end of summer, but I think that's mostly for people with only a few weeks vacation and the concerns of kids, because the truth is, after Labor Day, the full month of September and October, we're in a real tourist area because of the wine country and the California coast and the fishing. And I don't know what else we got up here, but there's lots of tourist business. And it's a great thing to see. And the September-October months is the point I was getting to. We really have a strong flow of people coming up. And like I said on last night's show, two of the best months of the year for catching big fish. It seems to be the fall spawn, and it doesn't matter if it's redfish down south or lingcod up here. You were getting into those big fish. By the way, I was looking for salmon catches on the coast on the way to take Michelle to work today, and we did come across a guy with a nice 10-pound lingcod.
Cool.
I still got what? You.
Yeah, I'm still here. Because we're going to have some folks listening to the podcast that are from the East Coast, Southeast, and may not have ever encountered an albacore.
An abalone is, everybody yeah. knows what a limpet is. And a limpet is a little mollusk that sits flat on the rock, and an abalone is a big one. An abalone is a bivalve mollusk, and it's an animal. They put a lot of study into it, a lot of research. This animal is a bivalve, and it clings to rocks in the intertidal zone. It only exists in a few places in the world. I think California and possibly somewhere in the southern hemisphere. You don't find them. You find them a little bit down in Mexico, and you might find a few in Oregon and up the coast, but it tends to stay in that temperate water zone. And it's a big mollusk with a shell up to 10 or 11 inches across. The deeper you dive for them, the bigger the shells are. And inside is a big foot of meat and the animal itself. Abalone, to give you an idea of the value of abalone, it was pretty much fished out recreationally. And I don't want to attribute its early demise just to overfishing. They're a very sensitive animal, the abalone. And they're very susceptible to environmental changes. And during the 50s, 60s, 70s, the industrial waste that went into our rivers and seas had a real impact on the near shore. Again, I said these are intertidal animals. They live in the intertidal zone. So that's going to be the rocky caves and cracks on the shore and the kelp forest that's real close to shore. And during around the 70s and 80s, there was so much fishing and so much pollution, there were so few abalone in Southern California, Northern California, around Catalina and the Channel Islands, that Fish and Game came in and put a moratorium on abalone fishing. I'm not sure how many years ago it was, probably about 10 years ago, but they again, allowed us to fish for the red abalone. You have red, white, and black abalone. I believe those are the three species. And the one that's come back into abundance, has seen a good recovery on the North Coast, is the red abalone. And it is an incredible animal. I've seen empty shells in dive shops up and down the coast that go a foot wide. And that meat in there, you can have 5, 6, 7 pounds of abalone. To give you an idea of the fishing pressure on abalone, today in the legal market, abalone steaks sell for $75 a pound. These are farm-raised abalone. It's illegal to take wild abalone commercially. So there are some farms in California that produce farm-raised abalone and sell it to the consumer at $75 a pound. That's one reason you don't see it much in restaurants. You don't see it much anywhere. So this is really a closet, and I shouldn't say a closet, but like a niche section of anglers. Again, 35,000 strong in a bad economy, who come out to the coast and really help stimulate the economy in a recreational fishery that needs the stimulation. Is that you scooting around on the chat board there, Chipper?
Yeah, we just we had Jeff Modry join us there in the chat room. He's from the Hatteras, North Carolina area. Yep, so he's just saying he's getting ready to go fishing tomorrow morning.
He's getting after the hurricane.
Yep.
They were the first hit at Hatteras, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, they got first landfall there. So he's got everything cleaned up. He's getting ready to go fishing. So,
thanks for tuning in there, Jeff.
And so back to the abalone, man. So this is like, I think I've seen it in sushi bars, right?
You will see it in sushi bars occasionally. Yeah, it's really a very...
That's me.
It's hard for me to explain the taste of abalone. It's if you took an oyster. No, if you took a giant scallop and crossed it with filet mignon, that's maybe the what you'd have in taste with abalone. A funny story, back in, I think it was 2001, when we had the great white sea bass bite in Southern California off of Malibu, and I got my record 75-pound white sea bass. That bite lasted from May into July, and which actually was similar this year. There was a very long white sea bass bite in Southern California. And one day, it was a Sunday, and I was cleaning two big fish, like 50-pounders, on the sidewalk. And that was back in the day when I had a retail shop. And a cop pulls up, LAPD, and he couldn't believe the size of these fish. He was a training officer, and he had some young lady officer with him for the day on Sunday. And I sent him off with a couple of big chunks of white sea bass. And about 2 weeks later, I pull up to the shop, and there's a little round styrofoam container sitting next to the front door, and the biggest abalone I had ever seen inside. He was part of a group of guys who come up every year to Northern California and do their dives and get their limits. You're allowed to take 3 abalone a day and 24 abalone a year. The California Department of Fish and Game has come a long way in a very short time in fishery management, fishery sustainability, and especially commingling that information that anglers, the stewards of the fishery, can muster up through our fishing. So for certain fisheries like lobster, California spiny lobster, or Pacific spiny lobster, and the abalone, we have a tagging system so they know, and report cards for steelhead at the end of the year so they know where we're fishing, when we're fishing, what we're taking, and what's coming out of the fishery. In abalone, they've gone a step further. They're doing surveys, intermittent surveys, and just interviewing anglers coming up with their catch. And they've done a lot of study on this animal, the abalone, the bivalve mollusk. And they find that, you know, the way you harvest it, first of all, you're not allowed to use tanks. It's a free diving fishery. So you dive down anywhere from 5 or 6 to some people go 30, 35 feet on a breath. And you the ideal way to take an abalone is to put your gauge on it and make sure it's big enough, and then you have an abalone pry bar and you just pop it off the rock. If they know you're coming, or if you spend a lot of time struggling, they will lock onto that thing like no suction cup you have ever imagined. And it's hard to get them off. So if you get that knife under there and you start tearing away at the animal, if it's undersized, the chances are it's not going to live. They're very sensitive to being disturbed and injured. And abalone as an animal is a hemophiliac. So if you cut the skin too big with the knife and have to release the mollusk for being undersized, chances are it's going to die. They bleed to death. They have no clotting agents. So there's a lot of study. California Department of Fish and Game puts out a lot of printed information in the form of pamphlets and online to inform anglers and let them know what's going on.
Cool.
All right. Am I giving you too much information here?
No, But I mean, now show me how you tie it into the kayaking, man.
Well, the kayaking, it's a great thing because we're going to launch in the morning with good conditions, and we're going to go out and we're going to hit our first light fishing, try to get a couple of big cabazons, a couple of big lingcods, and then stretch out, fish for an hour, hour and a half, maybe the whole day. Before the end of the day, we're going to put on our dive suit, throw on the fins, mask, and snorkel, put on a weight belt after you've slid into the water, and a lot of this is done at the side of the boat. And there's a whole technique for getting geared up. You drop down, anchor your boat up. One of the few times here in California anybody ever uses a bottom anchor for fishing off their kayak. But we use them for gathering the abalone because it keeps your boat in one spot when you leave it. Anchor up, slide on down, and take a good look around. Sometimes you have wonderful visibility where you can see everywhere on the water, and it's like a National G show on abalone. And sometimes you're crawling around with less than a foot of visibility and feeling around to the right spots and until you feel that animal and then get in front of it and pop it right off. But it is definitely, you know, it's part of the fishing, hunting, gathering of the kayak. There's so many different things I do fishing my kayak here in California. And on the saltwater, most days when I come out, you know, there's species in the surf that you're not going to get most likely on a kayak, and you're not going to target them, like the surf perch and the corbina. There's so many times that I've come out of my kayak at the end of the day, grabbed my little bait stick, a little spinning rod that we use for making bait and for light tackle applications, put a surf fishing leader on there, and they're the last fish of the day. So the kayak for us, you know, whether we're fishing from it or just using it for access, I mean, it's the full Monty. We're not trying to limit ourselves with any of these techniques.
Boom.
Yep, I hear the kennel back there.
Yeah, they're going crazy. So how do you handle these things?
Real easy. I didn't lose you there, did I, Chip?
No, I'm here, man. Okay. Go ahead.
Real easy. You know, there's no mouth to them. It's just a big foot. So when you get the abalone in front of you, you've got it measured, it's big enough to take, you slide your knife, and there's regulations for the knife too. It's got a dull edge on it. You just slide it right under the edge of that shell, under the edge of that foot, and they pop right off because it gets a little bit of air, and that foot is a suction cup. Most divers carry a bag with them, a mesh bag. In fact, in California, you're required to have a landing net on your kayak, any boat you have that you're fishing. You're required to have a landing net, and it's supposed to be 22 inches in diameter, although I've never seen a warden measure one. He just wants to see that it's there. And the landing net, the rule behind the landing net, the reasoning behind that rule is to affect the safe release of fish like halibut that are undersized without disturbing the fish and having it flop on the deck or anything like that. Anyway, for diving, they make what's called the diver's game bag, and the big one usually comes in a green color. And while it doesn't make that 22 inches, a lot of kayak anglers here use it as a legal landing net. And so for abalone diving, you're going down, you've got your weight belt on, you've got a knife, the abalone knife for plucking it off the rock. They call it popping the abalone off the rock. Because like I said, if you touch them and disturb them, they're going to clamp down real hard. If you sneak up on them and get that knife in there first after the measure, you can pop them right off. And hanging from your weight belt or your game belt, you're going to have a diver's game bag, and they go right there in the net. So not too many people can get their three on one breath of air. So usually you're going up and down a few times. But that's what they go into the game net. And you don't have to worry about them sticking to you or anything like that. You've seen the inside of an abalone shell, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Abalone, the mother of pearl on abalone. It's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I walked into a house in San Diego one time. This gal's father, quite an elderly guy, but he was quite an elderly surfer and quite a surfer in his day. And, you know, all the way down to San Diego, they were picking abalone from the rocks. And today, you know, you won't even see babies on the rocks. I think the recovering colonies of abalone in San Diego and Ventura counties are few and far between, while they are starting to rebound at Catalina and the Channel Islands. This guy had a lamp. It was actually a pretty ugly, big-looking lamp, probably made of wood underneath. But he cut squares and chips out of the abalone shells and covered this whole lamp with abalone. I hate to think what that thing might be valued at.
Hmm.
And
how do you prepare these things? You say you cut them up in steaks and
you take the abalone. What you're going to have is you're going to have a big round foot that's anywhere from 3 to 6 inches thick. And what I do and what most people do is you go around it and you trim off. Most of the animal is edible. The organs are very small, and they come out from the underside of the shell. So you clean all that stuff away, and it presents. It's not really obvious that they're organs. It's mostly slime and different colored stuff. So you cut that away, and then you've got some black frills is the best way I can describe it. Now, I've seen a lot of guys, especially guys who are traditional seafood eaters, will keep everything on the abalone outside of the organs, all that black frilly meat. But most anglers especially will trim all of the black meat off of the abalone foot, which is, there's not much of it. It's just, like I said, little frilly trim stuff, until they have just white meat on the foot, but saving all those trimmings, because it's one of the best cut baits in the Pacific. You'll catch fish using those abalone trimmings, a species of fish like California sheephead that you won't catch with any other bait. And using small hooks is a good tip. Abalone trimmings and small hooks. You'll catch fish that you've never caught before. And then, so I've got this big foot that can be anywhere from, 8 or 10 inches across to 5 or 6 inches high. And I'm going to slice it across the top, pancake style. And I'm going to slice steaks that are about a quarter inch thick. So from one animal, you can get enough abalone to feed easily 5 people, and often a lot more than that. And a lot of people will take those steaks and then further cut them into strips, like big clam strips. But the thing about abalone is you have to pound it. And that's what the meat tenderizing hammer was made for. It wasn't made for tough beef. It was made for abalone. And I can see the Native Americans in the day around here on the rocks with their abalone pounding the heck out of these things with other rocks to get them tenderized and edible. And it's a funny thing, because I was talking about all those people who come up here for the abalone season. You know, I will eventually dedicate one show entirely to the California park system. There is, which is under such pressure right now, budget-wise. There's plans to close a slew of the California state parks. But whether you're from California or anywhere on the planet, this is a great way to come and experience just about any part of California that you want to. And the state parks that are on the coast complement a network of private campgrounds that are right on the coast with boat launches, campgrounds, RV sites, bed and breakfasts, and quaint hotels close by. And about 4 o'clock during abalone season in these coastal campgrounds, about 4 o'clock, it starts to sound like there's a drum circle going on, because every camp is starting to pound out their abalone steaks to cook for that night. And it really is something. Some of these campgrounds have over 100 campsites, and to hear 40, 50, 60 different hammers going on in different camps, it really has, it's a pleasurable feeling, and what I call another really fishy feeling. You're getting a lot of action in that chat room there.
Yeah, we just had Jason Self join us.
I see him. I see him.
He's from the Portland area.
Now, are they listening as well as chatting?
Yes, they are.
Hello, boys, and welcome to the Ease of Kayak Fishing. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Reading and talking on the radio.
So that's right.
Thanks for that. I am from the Bodega Bay area, north of San Francisco. I started all this in Malibu in Southern California. I moved kayakfishing.com and myself over to near Cabo San Lucas up on the Sea of Cortez for a bunch of years. And then I met Michelle and followed her up to Sonoma County. Had you heard of Sonoma before you met me, Chuck? Is it famous enough from the wine and all that?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
Chip,
well, I was stationed in at Miramar down San Diego way. Yeah,
no,
I know
where Miramar is. I've been by it 100 times. Is the base is still there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I retired.
El Toro, they took out a few years ago.
Right, yeah. We moved our jets down from El Toro to Miramar, and we lived in California for like 11, 12 years. So that's why I have a fish and dive in my backyard.
Ah, the Cobra Fisher. You know, it's a funny thing. I don't know if you ever saw, about 7 years ago, my fishing cousin, Howard Rose, and I made an instructional DVD called The Kayak Fishing Video. And it's funny, it came out as DVD first, and then as a video first, and within months they were all DVDs. Anyway, what was I going to tell you about that? I featured a little product in there called the Locking Paddle Clips. And this is a crossover product that I sold several hundred pairs back in the day when I was doing retail sales. And now that we've got over 10,000 instructional videos out there, people still call asking for them. So I tracked down the manufacturer, and I got them back in. And I was going over a list of boats that they work on, which is pretty much all of the commonly used, you know, I should say all the popular models for fishing across the board, the paddle clips will adapt to. And what these are nylon locking paddle clips. So you can put your paddle in, and actually with a good application, you can carry your boat with it. And so I decided to package them up again and get them on the market, and I'm going to throw some of them up on the internet for sale as they get into the shops, and once they're established in the dealer network, we won't offer them on eBay or anything like that. But I was looking at all the boats, and the Cobra Fish and Dive was the one boat that I really don't think it works very well for because of those straight sides on it. You know what I'm talking about? The straight up and down sides on the Cobra Fish and Dive.
They're straight. You know, if you were going to take a nice fairing stick and hold it along there, you'd get a slight bend in it. But I tried a set of them and it didn't work. So.
Yeah. And that's like the one boat. You know, I found ways like the old Scupper Pro. There were a lot of them on the water when I was selling paddle clips. And we found a little step process where you just attach it to two points of the boat without making any modifications. But the thing is, on the Cobra Fish and Dive with those straight sides, and there's a few other models out there that are similar. I don't think they're as popular. But, I got to figure out somehow to tell people on this thing not to buy them for the fish and dive because I don't want them to waste their money. So how many years have you had that boat?
Well, I guess probably about 10 years, I guess.
Yeah,
so,
good for you. There was another boat from Cobra. There are two boats that the paddle clips fit on, the Marauder, of course. And a really underrated Cobra boat is, in my opinion, the Tourer. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah.
The Cobra Tourer? This is a nice fishing boat. And really for somebody who wants more kayak than they get in a lot of the sit-on-tops you know, that are targeted for anglers. That's always been a sleeper too, and it never became real popular that I saw. But I've always liked the Cobra Tour. I think that's a good one. So you hauled your fish and dive from California back out to Atlanta?
Yep, drug it all the way. But
I see a lot of that. What other boats have you got in your rotation, Chip?
I got the fish and dive. I've got a Prowler 13, the Trident model. And let's see, we've got a good old square stern canoe that always comes in good when you're pre-fishing for a tournament. Throw the little trolling motor on there and sneak
around.
It's a Mad River Orion TT.
Nice.
I've had that. Yeah, so that's my pre-fishing boat. So I can put the clone up in the front, you know, and he can cast into little areas, and we can check out little coves and stuff before a tournament. And then the next day we'll be in the kayaks, you know, so.
You know, I'm looking at the flash chat here, the blog, and I see that Jason just typed up that he was looking at an old magazine and saw an ocean kayak ad from 1984 that had dive boats, touring, and surf skis made in Hawaii shipped anywhere for less than $100. I think you can still ship for about that price. But I tell you, when I entered the sport in late 94 is when I started writing about kayak fishing. And I think the popular boats out there were from Ocean Kayak and Aquaterra. Do you remember that company? Aquaterra was a company that made a boat called the Prism. And that eventually sold to Perception Kayaks. And I think they quit making the Prism. It might be as long as 10 years ago. But there's a lot of them out there. Every once in a while you'll bump into a guy who's running an old Prism. And, you know, back in the day when I started, you could get the top-end fishing kayak with accessories for about $700. And you can hardly buy the boat for that anymore.
Yeah, I think
changed in literally 15, 16 years. I mean, the price of boats has doubled. The technology of boats has brought certain, you know, some of the boats, the pedal crafts, into the $2,000 range. But I guess in 15 short years, it's a lot more of a sport now than it was then. But luckily with airport shipping, you know, in most cases, you can still get it done for $100. It's the kayak itself that's going to cost you. Again, what I'm seeing is back in the day when oil was cheap, these boats were less expensive too. And, you know, it's different now. The cost of oil going up has affected the end cost to the consumer for a fishing kayak. And a lot of that has to do with the shipping of the boat as well. Those transportation costs, it just really eats away at it. I've had boats come from South Africa, from Europe. I've seen boats from Australia that are sensational. You know, you've heard of the fishing skis, the fiberglass boats. But I think a lot of that has to do with the hard cost of getting those boats here is why they haven't, you know, really grown in popularity. You know, and again, they cost upwards of a couple $1,000 each by the time you're done. But all real fishable platforms, you know, I'm seeing you guys have seen that. I'm sorry, Chip, go right ahead.
No, I just say it looks like Rob, a bad backcast, our Monday night host, has joined us here on the call.
Hey,
welcome,
hey,
Rob.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, how
about you calling in?
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to say welcome aboard to the Kayak Fishing Radio crew there.
I'm really excited. Thank you. I'm really excited. It's a great way to reach people.
Excellent.
Talk about the sport. Tell me a story, Rob.
Oh, I'm all storied out. Getting excited about the Charleston Chubtown Boondoggle. This weekend's fishing trip, but it's kind of still up in the air, depending on what the tropical storm does. But I'm hoping to get out there, man. If I don't, I'll definitely be. I gotta start writing.
Where's the Boondoggle in Charleston?
Yeah, South Carolina.
And that's October or this month?
No, Columbus Day weekend in Charleston. So anybody interested, sign up on Yak Angler, and we'll see you there.
I took my first deep read through Yak Angler last night, and I was up late. What a sensational, informative site that is. And doing
it.
Good things for the sport. I really loved it.
Absolutely.
Everybody thinks because I have kayakfishing.com that I've seen every website out there. And the truth is that I rarely get a chance to look at any of them. And Yak Angler is one of the most exciting sites I've seen in a long time. I haven't had a chance even to cruise the forums. That's just going through the site.
I used to read, you know, fishing blogs, like, all day long, and it's like, I've just gotten away from it, you know, because there's so much stuff to, there's so much material out there, you know. It's really hard to go around all of them every day.
It's two things, I think. I think everybody's a writer now, and I think that participation on forums, you know, we had the first kayak fishing bulletin boards at kayakfishing.com, and I think those were first published around 1998, about a year after the site was first published. And one thing I noticed about participation, and like you say, on the blogs and bulletin boards and on forums, I think it really is cyclic. I think that the majority of people who participate, and I think we'll end up seeing this on Blog Talk Radio too, you have your diehards who are going to be here forever, but I think that the main body of contributors, and these are people who put a lot of information out, do a lot of sharing, do a lot of helping and guiding people through their contributions, at some point they either burn out or lose interest. And then a new cycle of people come into it. And not always newbies. I think it's just as people find the venues. But, yeah, I don't think it's a personal thing. I think it's a very natural thing that that turnover happens. And I think, Rob, you're probably at risk of getting it back, and you'll be right in the thick of it again before you know it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's – well, I'm doing a lot of different stuff, too, now. You know, I mean, I love to write, but it's like I kind of run out of stuff to write about, you know, the stuff you know, that I'd write about time and again, you know, I'm just like, yeah, okay, I've written 100 articles like that, you know, now I need something new, you know.
Well,
that's,
you know,
with me, you know?
I think that kayak fishing has made that opportunity for a lot of people. You know, I've been writing for a lot of years. I don't know that I've written 100 pieces. Or actually, I don't know that I've had 100 pieces published. And again, you know, the internet era and so many venues out there to publish your information and get that information seen by people, you know, how much can you write for free if you're a writer? And
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
before you end up with your own website, which, again, happens to a lot of people. But I think that kayak fishing, especially for outdoor writers and fishing writers, for those writers who were able to grasp it, has really created new fodder, if you will, for reaching anglers. That's really what I was told. You know, I the whole thing with me started in February of 95 when my first article was published in Pacific Fisherman magazine. And the one thing that my publisher, Pete Barana, who has retired into the thoroughbred horse racing business, the one thing he told me is that every article he gets handed for his sport fishing magazine is just a rehash of the same articles he's been getting that people have been writing for 50 years. How much more can you say about them? So when we get new things in the sport, like SpectraLine and Fluorocarbon Leader, you know, circle hooks. So one of the oldest things in fishing, circle hooks were a dominant writing topic for a long time because nobody knew about it. And again, I think that's where we get our break in kayak fishing. And one thing I've noticed, that people who read magazines and even a lot of these people who read the sites, a lot of them, guests, will never get into a kayak, but the exciting nature of it, you know, to read it on the pages, it keeps people tuned in, and I really like that.
Yeah, it's I love writing about trips and stuff, but, you know, how many articles can you write about, you know, going out in, you know, in my area, and going out, and like, it's been a rough summer for me, you know, fish catching wise, you know.
Right. And where are you located, Rob?
Clearwater, Florida.
You're in Clearwater, okay.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to head up to Charleston for that event?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how far a drive is that?
Actually, I'm flying.
Oh, okay. So it's a big to do.
Yeah, well, boondoggles are great, man. You get to hang out with all of your friends, and people from all over the country, you know, show up at these things, and they're great, you know, and it's like, it's cool, really, to hang out with these people in real life, you know.
I'm so out of touch with the sport. This is the first I've recognized the boondoggle. I will research deeply when I get off.
We try to get together at least four times a year, you know, the kayak fishing radio crew and listeners and people that call in and all the yak angler crew, you know, and they're all kind of like interwoven together somehow. And we all get together and it's a blast, man. So if you've never been to one, or if anybody wants to go, you know, check out Yak Angler, jump in there. And we're more than happy to, all you got to do is get to Charleston and book a campsite and you're good.
Very cool. Very. I can't wait.
Yeah, man.
We're going to have a West Coast boondoggle, though.
Absolutely.
That's what was brewing up in my head. And
you got any spots out there for us there, Spiker?
Just spots where you'll be releasing 30 fish a day. It's really a unique fishery. You know, it's a funny thing. I've been boasting the rockfish fishery for the kayaks up here since I moved here. And back in the day, rock fishing used to mean that you put a five pound weight on the end of your line with 10 hooks, and you send it down 350 feet, and you leave it there baited for about 20 minutes, and then you spend 40 minutes cranking it back to the top, and you'd fill a gunny sack with 50 or 60 fish. As the fisheries got fished out, all those big rock cod. We've got closures now for canary rockfish and for cow cods. And you guys know cow cods from Alaska, probably. They grow big, but there's so few of them. So now we've got regulations. We've got a 10-bag limit, a 10-fish bag limit every day. And the fishery has changed. It doesn't. You can only fish in relatively shallow water, 180 feet. Or less in most places, 185 feet. It changes from fishery to fishery. From region to region in California. But so you can't go out and do that heavy killing. You can't use more than a couple of hooks on a ganyon anymore. So that recreational fishery, going out on the party boats rock fishing, really only occurs in a new sport that has really gaining steam when I started 15 years ago, called shallow water rock fishing. And really what the shallow water rock fishing is almost like medium tackle saltwater bass fishing. And if you fish freshwater bass, it's the same thing, just with a little heavier gear. And fishing these 20 species of rockfish, plus the ling cod and the cabazon, on this medium tackle, 12 to 20-pound, short, light, you know, medium, light rods, it is really, really fun. And the one step above other types of fishing is you often never know what fish you've got on before you get it to the top. And there are lots of pleasant surprises. And every once in a while, you get that big fish of a lifetime. You know, I'm sorry to be rambling so much, and I wanted to thank everybody in the chat room. I see Scuba Stan, Paddling Fan, Jason, we've been talking. Thanks, and guests, thanks everybody for tuning in. Where I was going with all of this, I don't remember, but it's just all my love of fishing.
Yeah, man, the boondoggles. Help us hook up a West Coast boondoggle, man, and that'll be fun. I'll go
just say when, and I will put it where, and we will hook that one up. try to tie some other fun stuff into it too. If you guys are all coming out, yeah. If there's a lot of people,
if you can connect camping and fishing and all that stuff, that's all.
Yeah, that's an easy time. That's all in one spot here. You know, that's what I was saying about the state parks and the private campgrounds on our coast. Oh, and I was talking about the shallow water rock fishing. I think that the way rock fishing has gone, the way the sport has changed and evolved into more of a mainstream fishery than what it used to be, was literally a meat fishery for what a lot of people consider junk fish. These are exciting fishing days. Like I say, in guiding in Malibu, I was lucky to get somebody onto a halibut or a white sea bass or a really great fish every time I took them out. But up here, the norm is releasing 20, 25 fish and taking home a bunch of fresh fish. So it's just so exciting. And the parks put it all right there. You're not, you wake up, you have your breakfast and your coffee, you slide into your boat, you know, and you take off. And it's just a great way to fish. I will give you guys one warning. It's called neblina. That's Spanish for fog. And when you come to California with your shorts and your T-shirts, don't forget your hoodie, because August, June, July, August, sometimes you don't see the sun on the coast around here. But it makes for, it keeps the conditions down, and you have real good fishing. You go 3-4 miles inland, and you got a hot, sunny, 80, 90-degree day. But the fog on the California coast. And, you know, San Francisco, the whole Bay Area is so associated with fog that... But it would be an exciting time. I'd love to do a boondoggle here.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, man.
So has anybody got any fishing plans for this weekend? Has anybody got any weather at all?
We're going to have weather here, so.
We've got a horrible red tide going on the coast. But red tide only affects the bivalve mollusks, that's clams, abalone, and mussels. And mussels are quarantined until October 31st anyway. But it does affect the seals and sea lions that eat fish, that eat clams and mussels. So every once in a while, some of the pinnipeds will show up sick or dead on the beach. It doesn't affect the finfish, though. And not the ones we're catching for sport, anyway. And so the fishing is open. A lot of anglers don't go out in the red tide. And when you get out in the water, red tide, if you've been in water that has a lot of plankton in it, what the red tide is that plankton that's shoulder to shoulder, and it's died from lack of oxygen, so it turns brown. And it looks like you're paddling through coffee grounds. That's how thick and soupy the seawater gets from a red tide. But one thing I noticed, when you get into water that's 30 or 50 feet deep, red tide runs in columns. So it's not the full thickness. And using my sonar to see through the red tide, fishing the clearer water below it, we've had epic days and just regular days fishing the red tide with nobody out there and never a problem with the fish. So we've got that big surf that's hitting Southern California is barely limping up here. Michelle and I took a look at the coast today, and so I'm going to get out either tomorrow, well, one or two of the next 3 days, and we're going to go try to catch some lingcod. And maybe, you just never know, maybe we can get lucky and get into a salmon too. I didn't see any reports today. I was asking a few fishermen on the beach. But I haven't had mine yet. It seems to be one salmon, one 20-pound salmon for every 3 kayaks we put on the water, and I'm always one of the 2 that isn't getting bit. But hopefully that'll turn around.
Awesome.
Chip, where are you taking the clone in those scooters?
A little place up in western Georgia called Highland Park. It's a couple hundred acres. They've got miles of trails through there, switchbacks and all that good stuff, hills and all that. And we'll just get out there and rage, chase him around.
Saw a crazy thing today coming up Coleman Valley. A young couple on a, looked like a Honda 90 trail bike coming up the road. Neither of them had helmets on. And that is something that I don't think I've seen in 20 years.
They don't have to wear helmets in California, do they?
Oh, you better believe it. You have to wear a helmet on a skateboard in California. Yeah, you do. They definitely instituted helmet laws here quite a few years ago. And it was just so shocking for me to see, because I'm used to seeing the gnarliest biker has got some kind of bucket on his head in this state. But, yeah, country living, what can I tell you?
Right. Now, we all practice good, safe riding skills, and we were out for a couple hours today on the Harleys, cruising around, went down south to Warm Springs, had lunch, and did a little sightseeing. So, yeah.
Michelle's got a big event at the Valley Ford Hotel. She works at a nice place, and a lot of the people who come up to fish with me stay there. It was a hotel. It's like an old cowboy hotel, an old Western hotel. It's a saloon and a restaurant, and above the saloon are seven rooms, and it was built in 1864 on Highway 1, a little town called, little two-street town called Valley Ford, California. And she got in there, and she runs the saloon and the hotel, and it's a nice little spot. But they do a oyster, you know, we've got here at Tomales Bay, oyster, and Drake's Bay in Marin County. We've got oyster farming on a very large scale. They send these oysters all over the country. Several different varieties. My favorite is the Kumimoto. And but anyway, the hotel does every Labor Day weekend on the Sunday. They do an oysters and fog event. They get four bands in there, lots of everything, bluegrass, blues, rock, jazz. They get five bands in there, and they serve up a bunch of – the hotel, the restaurant is called Rocker Oysterfellers, and it's got a southern twist on it because the owners are from Galveston. And so they've got a southern twist. So they're going to be doing lots of poor boys and fried chicken and all the stuff I'm not allowed to eat. But so that's what our weekend is. And Monday, so I get to fish every morning while she's working. And Monday we both got the day off, so I think we're going to paddle.
Very cool. All right, man. Well, I'm gonna head out. You did a great job, man. First show.
I appreciate that. I think we're going to count down to the end of this show. I wanted to talk to about a few things to the readers, and then I will sign out. Chip, Rob, Chuck, when you're listening to the podcast, and all you guys, thanks so much for having me on board. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I absolutely love the chance to talk to more fishermen. And this is just a great venue and a great way to do it. And you guys are doing so much in growing the sport. I really am excited about what's going to happen to Kayak Fishing Radio. I think that the day where there are thousands of listeners is not too far away.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you, man. And congrats and welcome to the
thanks.
To the
and I look forward to fishing with you guys. You'll probably see
absolutely
me out there before I see you here, but a West Coast boondoggle just sounds outrageous.
Yeah, man. All right, man. Well, have a nice weekend, and I will talk to you later.
I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. And this afternoon, if you're on the West Coast, I'm glad you tuned in. If you're here, it's because you either fish from a kayak or you think it's a good idea. And we try to make every show full of good quality content and information. Shows that are coming down the pike, we're going to keep them on for a little more than an hour. It looks like we're going to run about 5 minutes shy this week. I want everybody to remember it's Labor Day weekend. It's a big holiday. There's a lot of people out there driving around thinking about other things. So watch the roads, watch the waters, and have a good, safe weekend and a good holiday and good fishing, continued good fishing. And we'll see you all again in a week right here on Kayak Fishing Radio. Let's get a little banjo music to close this out. Actually, I saw a few outros here, so we'll just steal a little clip from somebody. That's probably Rob. And for next week, remember, you have any questions about the sport, you have any comment, type it in on the blog, phone it on in, and we look forward to hearing from you. I'm not seeing any outros here, so I'm going to dig up a little bit of music, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me.